championship. And it's when you can have all four of your teams really and make a case for all four of them, yeah, it's a great time. For the record, I think it's going to be the Bruins, but
let's actually start with the Bruins game last night. That was after a 6-2 win in the first game of that series. I did not expect what I saw last night, and really it was Tampa just came out and really took it to the Bruins. I actually thought, Randy, that the Bruins did a heck of a job staying in that game. They didn't have a shot for the first, 15 minutes of the game, and they were still in it.
And they create chances. What I love about the Bruins is they don't mess around. They shoot the puck, I think, as well as any team in the NHL, but you got Ryan McDonagh diving in front of shots and Tampa really committing to clogging shooting lanes, and they become a really tough opponent for what is the Bruins' strengths. But, you know, I honestly, if you told me at the beginning of the series after Boston came back with that epic third period again against Toronto and played probably their best 20 minutes of hockey all season, that if you're going to go back to Boston 1-1, I think you'd sign for that. And I don't know, I would love to know the stats on this, but in the NBA and NHL playoffs, how often does a team win game one of the next series after they play their way to that series with a game seven win the previous series? In other words, how often does that momentum carry you into that game one? I would venture to bet it's pretty often, because it seems every time the Bruins or any team you're following wins a big game seven, they tend to win game one in the next series. So I'm fine with the Bruins going back to Boston, tied at one with Toronto, with Tampa. You hope that they can, you know, grab the odd games. If you grab the odd games, games 1, 3, 5, and 7, you win the series. So I would not be surprised to see this one with Tampa go seven again.
I'd like to get your take on this. There was a situation late in the game yesterday when the Bruins got called for a high stick. It was a double minor. They ended up spending 4 minutes in the box. Now, Tampa didn't score. They killed it off, but you're still shorthanded for 4 minutes. But the replay clearly showed that the Bruins didn't do anything, that it was the Tampa's own player that caused the high stick. The Bruins didn't do anything wrong. That's almost a situation with so much replay in all professional sports these days. There's a spot right there that begs for the chance for a coach to have a challenge there and have them look at that, because that should never have been called.
I would love to see that, because I hate the replay of let's go back 2 minutes and see if they actually were on sides on the zone entry.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, what a like ebb killer and flow killer, and it's just not hockey.
Right.
So if you're going to break things down to fractions of a second to see if a guy's skate blade is 2 inches in front of the blue line when the puck is actually sitting on the blue line, but you can't go back and review if a high stick, like a big, big call, like you said, 4 minutes just kind of wipes out, you know, a big chunk of your third period and your attempt to come back. And then Pastrnak totally got boarded. I thought the non-call on Marchand, I thought that was a good stick check. You know, you are allowed to stick check much as you are in the sport of lacrosse. I thought that was a good play by the defenseman not to commit a penalty and to just stick check Marchand.
Yep.
But the Pastrnak, I mean, he was completely boarded, and that should have been a call. And I don't understand how – I mean, that was a blatant one, and usually the officials are going to err on the side of if a guy's hit from behind and you're trying to protect any kind of, you know, bad head injury, you're going to call it. So I was shocked that they didn't call that one, because I thought that one was pretty blatant. But obviously the missed high stick is a pretty bad call as well.
Well, and to me the key moment in that game last night actually came early, and that's when the Bruins had a 5-on-3 for a minute and 45 seconds, and they didn't score. I mean, that's the situation there, Randy, where you don't get those opportunities very often, and, boy, you really have got to take advantage of those. That's like having the bases loaded and nobody out and not scoring.
Well, and it's also that's also like having the bases loaded, not scoring, and swinging at a pitch that's out of the zone to put yourself down in the count.
Right, right.
Because the equivalent to that is losing 3 faceoffs.
Right, right.
They lost 3 faceoffs on the minute 45. So, you know, credit Tampa for winning the 3 faceoffs as well. I can't remember who the personnel was out there. I had to think Bergeron's in the circle, and he's been wonderful his entire career in the faceoff circle. But, you know, credit Tampa to winning those 3 draws. And you know, not allowing the Bruins to just set right up in the offensive zone. They were able to clear three times. And still, I mean, you know, the Bruins hit the post. I think it was Pastrnak, I think, who hit two posts and the goalie's back on that.
Yep,
so
yep.
There's a bit of bad luck, too. And, you know, sometimes in the sport of hockey, especially in a tight one, you look back at those posts and those one or two bounces that don't go your way, and that could decide a game. And that minute 45 right there, hitting the pipe and not being able to put one in, yeah, that's a signature moment in that one.
Well, you know, you brought up the faceoffs. I think that is sometimes an underrated part of the game. I mean, Tampa last night won, I think, over 60% of the faceoffs in the game. And that is such a big thing because you automatically get possession of the puck, and I think people forget how important those really are.
It's puck possession time is so valuable, especially in the playoffs when, you know, it's the best teams remaining, so the teams, you know, are pretty well evenly matched. So the team that's going to have, you know, if you win 60% of the faceoffs, you probably are going to have puck possession about, you know, 6 out of 10 times
right.
as well. And, yeah, I mean, you look back into a, you know, it ends up being a one-goal game. The Bruins get that kind of odd, I believe it was Krug, the very odd odd angle goal. And,
yep.
You know, that was a bad bounce for Tampa. But when you control the puck, you can afford to, you know, survive a couple of bad bounces there. You know, Tampa had kind of a bad bounce in the bank, you know, at the end of the game because
right.
they controlled the puck so much.
Well, before we move on to baseball, I have to point out, I mean, you know, Randy, you know, he actually sounds like he knows what he's talking about, and he's played a little hockey in his time. As a matter of fact, I have to congratulate you. From what I understand, you guys won the men's league championship down there in the Fairfield
yeah,
area this year.
Really, really, really proud. One of my greatest athletic achievements, winning a Tier 4 beer league championship this past month. You know, I want to just say that our team really grinded out, put a lot of blood, sweat, and beers into everything, and just really proud of the effort we show on and off the ice.
Well, let me ask you this. Was that more important to you, or was winning the beer pong championship more important to you?
You know what? Both are great athletic achievements, but I'd have to say that you know, the hockey team, I'm actually the GM, president, head coach, and captain of. So, you know, I'm really
awesome.
Just proud of the squad.
That a boy.
In all honesty, it is a good exercise, and I get a good sweat once a week with good friends. We have a blast. We have a good time. We go out and have a, you know, a beverage or two after and some laughs and listen to some Springsteen, and it's my favorite night of the week.
Well, there you go. Well, let's move on to the Boston Red Sox, and I know what a big fan you are. You've already gone to Fenway this year. Were you at opening day at home at Fenway? Were you not?
No. You know which game I went to was, and Gene, it was like if you're a real Red Sox fan, you would have enjoyed this day. I think it was 32 degrees, but not like totally like overwhelming. There was one of those like early spring Boston, kind of like a light little hail, but not enough to interrupt the game. And it kept a lot of the, we'll call them truly fair weather fans.
Yep,
it wasn't fair weather.
Yep.
The 10,000 or so people I would estimate at Fenway were the hardest core Red Sox fans and knew when to get up. They did the wave at the right time when the Orioles were hitting, not when the Red Sox were hitting. They actually, you know, like they knew, you know, the etiquette of the game.
Right,
and
right.
They were hardcore. And we moved, I mean, cheap tickets, moved right behind third base. Sat right next to the Orioles dugout, and Sox won. It was, you know, everyone was playing in ski masks. It was really good weather for the outdoor classic, actually, instead of a ball game.
Yeah.
But,
well,
you know, we had a blast.
17-2 start. I mean, with considering all the moves that the Yankees made in the offseason and getting Stanton in the presence of Judge and Sanchez, everybody was ready to hand them the American League East title. You know, despite even though the Red Sox signed J.D. Martinez, everybody was ready to hand the AL East to the Yankees. I think that maybe made the start the Red Sox got off to even a little bit more surprising, don't you think?
I don't. I'd lie to you if I said I thought they'd go 17-2 to start the season.
Good. Don't lie to me.
But I would never lie to you, Gene.
Okay.
I would. You know, I would say that the biggest off-season move of the season that the Red Sox made was not J.D. Martinez, and I think it's one of the most underrated moves in all of baseball. It was naming Alex Cora manager of the Red Sox
right.
because last year, they won, don't forget, it's a team that won 93 games and brought back just about everybody, plus the bopper they needed, but plus I think that positive energy that they seem to play with. I'm not in the clubhouse. I'm a fan. I'm just watching on Nesson and just telling from the body language that you watch through the TV and listening through the radio. But they just seem like they are having so much more fun and playing loose and allowed to be themselves. And I think Alex Cora gets it for how to manage players of this generation. And that baseball is supposed to be fun. And I think the movement is against the old, hard-nosed, old-school, tough guy baseball mentality, which we grew up with. And, I love those kind of players. I'm a fan of Dustin Pedroia and the way he plays the game. But then you watch a guy like Bogaerts. You watch a guy like Hanley Ramirez allowed to, have fun and be goofy and play loose. And they just look like they're playing with so much more joy and fun. And I think it comes right from the top. Alex Cora is not just a feel-good kumbaya guy. He's also a great baseball mind.
Right.
Guy knows the game. He combines the analytics of today with the, managing of personalities of players of this generation. And so you remember that they won 93 games last year, and it seemed like, there was the David Price saga with Dennis Eckersley and Pedroia spouting off, and it didn't seem like they were having any kind of fun.
Right.
Poppy was gone. It was the first year without that big presence, not just in the lineup but in the clubhouse. Now, this is a team that won 93 games on talent and makeup, now allowed to have fun and bring that energy like the Houston Astros had last year, that Alex Cora was such an integral part of as their bench coach. And, the belief he has in these guys and the fun he allows them to play with, now I'm not surprised that they started the season 17-2, watching the way they play.
Well, I have to say that there's a couple of other things that I think factor into this. All those things you said are true, but there's a couple of other things. I think we forget that Xander Bogaerts played hurt most of last year. People were killing him, but he was playing hurt most of last year. Brock Holt has been dealing with vertigo for quite some time. He's now, they've got him that under control. Look what he was able to do before he went on the DL. I mean, they've got guys, Hanley Ramirez, who I was ready, and I'll admit I was wrong. I was dying for somebody to take him off the Red Sox hands for a bag of balls. And, look what he's done. I mean, you've got guys now that underperform, be it for the circumstances or because they were injured, that are now healthy, and they're giving you what they could have given you last year. And you won 93 games with those same guys. What are you going to do this year?
You hope for 100 because it's probably what it's going to take to stave off the Yankees. Because let's be real. I mean, the Yankees are going to be right there.
Right.
And they count just as much in April as they do in September. One thing that drives me crazy among baseball fans, well, don't worry, it's just April, it's just May. What the hell are you talking about? There's 162 of them. They count just as much on April 1st as they do on September 1st.
Right, right.
But, of course, baseball is a different beast because it is 162, and it is about momentum and how you're feeling and how you're seeing the ball and how the ball's coming out of your hand as a pitcher. And right now, you just know that at the end of the day, Stanton and Judge are going to hit 100 home runs between the two of them. And Gary Sanchez is – but forget about those guys. Didi Gregorius is the heart and soul of that
team. How about that? Yeah.
I mean, he is a hell of a ball player.
Yep. Yep.
And imagine being the guy, they always say don't replace a legend. Being the guy that takes over at shortstop for the New York Yankees after Derek Jeter retires and he performs like this.
Yep.
It's tough to be underrated being the cleanup hitter for the New York Yankees and shortstop that replaced Derek Jeter. And yet, I think he's underrated.
Well, he's just not. He doesn't get the. He's not flashy. He just gets the job done. I guess is it. He's not hitting 450 foot home runs, which today with launch angle and exit velocity and all this other stuff, that's all people care about. And yeah, he's getting his home runs, but he's not. He doesn't mash them to the extent that some of those behemoths do.
And he breaks up the lineup too, being a left-handed power threat, gap hitting threat. In the middle of those, three monster right-handed sluggers, I mean, the Yankees are a matchup problem. There's no doubt about it. They're going to be right there. But, bring it on. I mean, what is better than the Red Sox and Yankees battling it out all summer? I'm hoping to get down to the stadium next week for one of those Wednesday night games because, You know, I check StubHub. Those are the nights to go. You know, you find the TV standing right. room, and then, you know, find your way, you know, in the sixth inning maybe to a little bit better of a seat, although it's like Fort Knox at Yankee Stadium. They're not down with that.
No.
Which is why I love going to Citi Field. And let's not forget about the New York Mets in this area, too. I mean, Mets are playing fun baseball, and they're talking about a team that's healthy. So, like, what a summer we have on our hands. Red Sox, Yankees, and Mets are all legit.
Yep.
Obviously, in Boston, the Bruins and the Celtics are making playoff runs here, and the Celtics have a lot to you have a lot to be excited about with the Celtics, and you know football will eventually culminate the summer with an interesting summer probably at Patriot Place and new life for the Giants and Jets after the draft, and it's a fun time to be in. I venture to say that Connecticut is one of the best places to be a sports fan because you're in the middle of it all.
Yeah,
there's, and the rivalries
right.
are there.
Yep. Before I let you go, I just a little perspective here when you think about this, Randy. You know, you and I have been Red Sox fans for a long time. I'm a little older than you are, but it's how the expectations of Sox fans have changed. After you win the World Series a few times, you know, back in the old days, we used to expect bad things to happen. It was gloom and doom, right? You know, it's like, how are they going to ruin my day today? Well, now they start 17-2. You know they're not going to continue at that pace. They lose a few games, and people are losing their minds. I mean, you got people ready to jump off the Prudential Building because they lose a series. I mean, it's just amazing to me how expectations have changed over the last 10 to 15 years.
And I'm going to contradict myself a little bit and say, you know, when those happen, you have to realize that even if you win 100 games, and that's a great season, you're going to lose 62
right.
in a major league season.
Right.
So that does bother me a little bit when I hear, you know, over-the-top Red Sox. And I'm like, come on, calm down. You're giving us a bad name. Like, all right, so they lost 2 to the Oakland A's. They went out west. You know, they're 17-2. Yeah, you know, obviously you never want to lose, but, you know, pump the brakes and realize that, you know, of all the sports, it truly is, you know, a marathon before it's a race, before it's a sprint. And, you know, it's great that we have expectations, but, you know, we got to be a little bit logical here, too, and understand that you're gonna lose 60-something games in a great, even if you have a great season.
Yep.
You know, I guess it's better than the doom and gloom, opposite, which we used to know before 2004.
No question about it. Randy Brochu, thank you very much for a few minutes this morning. I'll let you get back to work, and we'll have you on later on in the season.
Very good, Gene. Thanks for having me, and have a good one.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
See you.
Randy Brochu here on Sports Country. This is the Wake Up Call. Thanks for joining us. It has been a great morning, day number two here on Sports Country. And you heard Randy. I mean, this is a guy that went to college in Boston at Boston University, and he's seen it all. And I'll tell you what, if you get an opportunity, he is a great, great broadcaster. He does games for Sacred Heart University. He does their football games, their basketball games. He does hockey. I believe he's doing some lacrosse now. He does some baseball. If you get a chance, check him out. It's sacredheartpioneers.com, and check out their broadcast. Randy does a great, great job.